This man is a Super Bowl champion as the head coach of the Baltimore Ravens. He won that title. He joins us now on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line, Brian Billick, here on the Fan 680 and 93.7 FM. Coach, always good to have you on. How you doing?
Doing great.
Let's talk about a few different things. Obviously, Tom Brady is going to meet with the media later on today. What challenges do you see for Tom Brady, if any at all?
Well, obviously, this is, you know, uncharted territory, so to speak, because everything Tom Brady does is uncharted, even though we can compare it to Peyton Manning going to Denver and certainly a Joe Montana going to Kansas City. But this is, you're talking about the GOAT. You're talking about, you know, 20 plus years, a 42-year-old quarterback. I think the biggest challenges are obviously, one, in terms of the actual transition, which Tom Brady will do fine, but the expectations. When you talk about the transition, and it's, you know, people have been asking me all week long, well, you know, how is Tom Brady going to adapt to Bruce Arians? Well, I'm not so sure it's not Bruce Arians adopting Tom Brady. Bruce Arians is an excellent coach, and he's going to sit there and say, okay, let's find a common ground here in terms of the verbiage, the style, what you want to do, what we're used to doing. They'll get to that fairly readily. Part of the problem is, though, with what we're all dealing with in the country right now, they're severely limited by the amount of interaction they can have. So that's the biggest challenge right now, being able to get together and work out exactly the style and the system that they want to run right now. Let's remember that Peyton Manning, when he went to Denver, he ran his system because he just did what Peyton Manning did. They ran exactly what he wanted to. When Joe Montana went to Kansas City, Paul Hackett was his offensive coordinator in San Francisco. He became the offensive coordinator in Kansas City. So he was running the exact same system Joe had run his entire life. So that's probably the biggest challenge for Tom Brady and Bruce Arians. And the second thing is expectations, because with Tom Brady, it's Super Bowl or bust. Anything less than a Super Bowl, and Tom Brady tells you that because of their history. So Tampa, that's a tall order for Tampa. That's new territory for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, at least it has been for 20-some-odd years. Those expectations are the biggest thing they're going to have to deal with.
Brian, is it easy to say from a talent point of view, if you overlaid New England's current talent with the talent down in Tampa offensively and even defensively, is this a more talented team that he went to?
Yeah, you could make a real case for that offensively in particular. You know, Tom Brady last year, what he was able to do with better than 600 throws, people saying, well, he didn't throw the deep ball as well. He didn't have anybody to throw to with the deep ball. Deep ball is not a function of arm strength. It's a function of touch and timing. And Tom Brady has plenty of touch and timing. He now has a crew in Tampa Bay that gives him both the vertical element that he has not had last year in New England, and certainly he can manufacture that small ball underneath in a myriad of ways, and probably a better offensive line because that was a real struggle for them in New England. So, yeah, I think you could – that goes back to the expectation. You know, they're expected to have – one of the top offenses because, A, it's Tom Brady, and B, he's got better talent than he had last year in New England.
Brian, if I would have told you, because a few years ago, we've had this conversation a multiple of times, that eighth graders have film that they take home. They have iPads they bring home. 7-on-7's going on across the country. There's so much more available to young guys, but it didn't seem we could find 32 guys to be real starting quarterbacks in the NFL. If I would have told you a 5,000-yard passer with 33 touchdowns and a former MVP from just a few years ago might not have a seat at the table, what would you have said?
Yeah, I'd say what's missing from the equation is those 30 interceptions. You know, at the end of the day, because that's what it is with Jameis Winston, isn't it? It's the fact that he had unbelievable productivity. You can throw up the ball as many times as you want. What makes a great quarterback is that you have more upside than downside. The really good quarterbacks in this league, the Pro Bowl-level quarterbacks, I won't even put it at the Hall of Fame level, but, you know, you got to be at least 2-1. If you're not 2 touchdowns to 1 interception, and that doesn't mean you just don't throw a lot. You got to be able – the real benchmark to me is a 500 to 550-plus throw, 2 touchdown to 1 interception ratio. 2-1 interception ratio. And for Jameis Winston, that has been the problem. He'll do that in the game. He'll throw 4 touchdowns. But the next game, he'll come back and throw 4 interceptions. And that's really the challenge. There will be a spot for him. I don't know if it will be as a starter. And that's going to be his challenge, that when he has a chance to get in, that he can indeed have one of those 4 touchdown games, not the 4 interception games.
Brian Billick with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line, NFL Network analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at Coach Billick. Do you see the same for Cam Newton? Is there a place for him to be a starter this year?
Yeah, it's just, this again, and it's exacerbated by what we're all dealing with right now. If you want to bring Cam Newton in, you got to get eyes and hands on him, don't you? You got to find out just how healthy he is. You got to know what is. You got to look in his eye and find out where he is mentally in terms of coming in. Are you going to come in and willing to be that backup? Do you have to be the starter? What is your mindset? There's a lot going on with bringing Cam Newton in. Now, if he is healthy, certainly the next question is, okay, if he is healthy, can he continue to play his style of play? That is, run the ball and be as effective as he is, obviously throwing the ball down the field. But given the injury, given his age, this is just different than a Tom Brady or a Peyton Manning who made careers out of knowing how to protect themselves. Well, Cam Newton's game is all about being Cam Newton in the physicality of the running game with him. It's not his total game. It's not Lamar Jackson. But certainly it's a big element of it. And is the injury going to limit that aspect of it?
And there is an angle of the draft that we'll talk about in a second. But I do want to ask, I'm not looking to date you. I'm not saying that you were playing or coaching in a time when jumping jacks and guys smoking butts was part of, you know, camp in August. Let's get in shape when we get here, although it has changed. What about the physicals themselves? We keep talking about the physicals and the fine-tooth comb. What was a physical 30 years ago? Like, how did a guy pass or how did a guy fail short of a bone sticking out of his leg?
Well, not to make light of it, but it's what day is it? Tuesday. Okay, you pass. You're good. you got no concussion problems. How many fingers am I holding up? You know, as long as he's not saying I'm Batman, you know, okay, he's going to pass the physical. And obviously, I'm joking to a degree. But it's like anything. I mean, obviously, the technology that we have in measuring where a player is physically is light years different than it was even, you know, the 10, 15 years ago when I was coaching in the league. The tools that we have, the diagnostic tools, so obviously you're going to use them. And so we are much more critical only because we have more information when it comes to the injury of a given player. So it is tougher for a player today to pass that physical than it was years ago.
The NFL is going to do something different, which is they're going to go back to the old days of just doing the NFL draft the way they used to. Do you think as part of we want information, we need visuals, do you think the war rooms now, besides being the silent video that we'll see, do you think there's going to be more access to GMs and coaches and they're going to stream that stuff to try to let you know that, hey, man, we've got you guys in mind as much as possible?
Yeah, because this is different. You want to make it inclusive. We all know we could actually do the draft probably in the morning. You want to exclude the fans, just technically everybody select who they're going to select with the way, you know, the technology we have and the internet connectivity with everybody. You get everybody on a conference call. You could whip through it probably in about 6 or 7 hours, but it's not good TV. And that's the way it has grown. Well, it's access for the fans and it's great. As we all know, the draft has become this mega event and it's so unfortunate Las Vegas is going to miss that. We saw last year in Tennessee and Nashville what a spectacular event that was. And it's too bad we're going to miss that in Phoenix. In Las Vegas. So, yes, since we're not going to have that element of it, that visual, then to increase, and I don't know what the league's doing. I know with the NFL Network, we're very limited right now. I do most of my hits from home. We're not even doing that as we get to the path to the draft and those other things, because they're not able to staff up fully all the technical people in Culver City or at NFL Films and Mount Laurel, New Jersey. So I imagine as we head towards that, if we can increase that interaction, maybe a war cam in every draft room, obviously it's going to be orchestrated, but that would give us just a little more visual as we march towards the draft, and particularly compared to what we've seen. Plus, it's unfortunate. I don't know what the plan is for these guys. I mean, we always make a big deal about the guys sitting in the green room, and what a moment it is to be able to share that with a player, to be a top pick, a first-round pick in the draft, and all the emotion with it, and the family, and the whatever. Obviously, that's got to change. So, yeah, this is going to be a watered-down version, at least from a TV standpoint, of what the draft's about.
Brian Billick with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line from the NFL Network. You can follow him on Twitter at Coach Billick. Coach, were you surprised to see both Dimitroff and Dan Quinn come back to the Falcons?
I applaud the continuity. I applaud Mr. Blank. The easiest thing to do is to fire somebody. There's a lot of different reasons why teams struggle. Clearly, they're going to be a bit of a hot seat. I think Dan put even more of a spotlight on him when he decided to take over the defensive play calling. That usually is tough because now you're not just being touched on the 16 wins and losses, but now for those 1,200, 1,300 some odd calls you're making specifically as the defensive guru, that you know, or offensive guru like we all get when we get these jobs. But I applaud Mr. Blank for saying, you know what, we've had success with this group. We had a lot of injuries last year. We went through a number of things. We're going to see if we can put this thing back together. I imagine it's a pretty short leash.
Dante Fowler is the big-time investment. Todd Gurley is the, I think there really could be an upside investment. What do you think of those two guys coming here?
Yeah, absolutely, because you've seen the proven productivity. Now, Gurley, the role will be a little bit different. Obviously, Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, the things you've got going on. No one's signing him with the idea that he's going to be a 300-plus carry back, but he's going to have a specific role. And like they've done in Atlanta for a number of years with the two-back system and the different way they've rotated through, with Freeman and Coleman and that whole group. I don't know who they're going to match with it necessarily or what the rotation will be, but certainly adding the talent of a Todd Gurley, who doesn't have to carry the load at a 300-plus year, ought to be productive.
Do you think he's a $6 million worth it guy?
Well, you know, anymore, the numbers, to me, it's all like Monopoly money. You know, are these quarterbacks worth $100 million-plus guaranteed, whatever? You know, compared to a lot of other things, no, but that's the market in the NFL. What's the cap this year, $198 million?
That's correct.
So, yeah, and particularly with running backs, it's hard because the running back position to a degree is devalued, not because of their talent or what they do, but just because the way the nature of the league is run. So, you know, how these dollars fit, and yeah, does his talent warrant that? Yeah. Does his participation and it fit within the cap and how you go and how that affects the rest of your cap? You know, that's maybe an unanswerable question.
Look, relatively speaking, everybody is dealing with bigger problems, but if you were coaching right now, considering these circumstances, how stressed out would you be? How much would you have to change your approach?
Yeah, and the hard part is who do I call to find out how we did this before? You know, it's like, okay, well, you know, you get that touchstone of, oh, okay, before we did such and such, so now you're starting from scratch. And obviously it's going to test you as a teacher, because that's what coaching is. Then I'm sure there's going to be a number of different visual chats, use the digital technology, pump it into the players. I think the bigger problem that I'm concerned with, because they'll get that teaching sequence down, they'll get that figured out, and you're going to have access to the players in that regard. So that part of it, I think, you know, the virtual, I'm just sitting, did a virtual math class with my grandson. You know, because they're homeschooling now. So we just did a 45-minute math class. And so you're going to get that kind of
thing.
How'd
you do, by the way, Brian? How'd you do?
He was magnificent. I was struggling. I had to, as long as I stay the chapter ahead, I'm okay.
It's so funny. I've said that for years. I always knew that I was one day smarter than my kids. They're teenagers now. I've seen some of their work. I'm no longer one day smarter than my kids.
Yeah, I'm concerned he's going to ask me a question based on coming out of school that's that chapter ahead, and I'm going to go, oh, boy, let me get back to you on that one. But the bigger concern I have is not only not working together, but given the limitations, where are these players working out? I mean, you can get out and work out. I get that. But gyms are closed. Where do you have access to that? I mean, this, you know, that's my bigger concern right now, or where are these players conditioning? Because they will, you know, they'll put the effort in, but where are they going to get that done?
Hey, Brian, one of the things that we've talked about a lot here as well, especially I have kids who play a little bit of, you know, we have some sports, and a lot of guys listen and a lot of women listen and actually have kids in the same boat. I know that my kid is not a hear it, do it. She needs to physically be out there. Like 2D is not necessary. She needs 2D. She needs whiteboard. She needs, but 3D is how. That's the other thing. I know that different guys have different football IQs. But there is something to spacing. There is something about physicality and seeing things as opposed to just looking at them at a board. Is that a fair assessment of how some guys
absolutely
do need to, yeah, okay.
Absolutely. Some players can take it directly from the classroom onto the field. They're that kind of perceptual learner. But there's others, you're right, you need that tactile space relationship. A lot of clubs I know in Baltimore, they've got it's not necessarily a 3D, but it's a full life. They can project on a screen. You know, the old chair drill, you used to line up the chairs and the players would point to who they block. They can actually put fronts and coverages up there, and the players can see it as best you can in that perspective, and there's maybe some clubs doing now, but you know we're getting close to 3D, to where, because anytime you put a player on the field, you put him at risk. And if you can duplicate the same mental and visual perspective without physically putting him at risk, you know we're getting to that. So maybe this accelerates that. Now, make no question, the coaches and the players will adapt, and they'll get the learning curve down. Will it be as good as the OTA times, the time in the classroom, and then you get into training camp? No. So they're going to be a little bit behind the curve.
All right, Coach, listen, as always, we appreciate the time, and hopefully the next time we talk, we'll actually be talking about players at least practicing on the field.
Sounds great, guys.